You wake up, you choose what kind of coffee to brew, and you decide exactly how you want to respond to that like slightly passive aggressive email sitting in your
Yes, you
inbox.
feel totally in charge.
Exactly. You feel like you are the captain of your ship, making conscious, independent choices every single minute of the day. But what if neuroscience and biology and all this behavioral data prove that your quote unquote free will is actually just, a brilliantly disguised illusion?
Which is a pretty terrifying thought,
Boy, oh,
honestly.
totally terrifying. But welcome to today's custom-tailored deep dive, where we are essentially dismantling the engine running beneath your daily life. We're exploring this really fascinating piece by Clint Matheny titled The Illusion of Free Will and What Would Jesus Do? A Moral Compass in a Mechanized Mind.
Yeah, and it is a text that fundamentally threatens the way we view our own autonomy.
Yeah.
Because Matheny is pulling from hard science and societal data to argue that we are, far more pre-programmed than
Yeah.
we ever want to admit.
Yeah, and I know the immediate fear when hearing that premise, right? Like, if we are just these pre-programmed biological machines reacting to stimuli, why even bother trying to be a decent human being?
Right, like what's the point?
Exactly. If you aren't actually steering the ship, does morality even exist? But I want to promise you, the listener, right now, that we are not about to drag you into some like pessimistic, endless philosophical lecture.
No, far from it. The destination we're heading toward today is actually incredibly practical. Matheny offers this very surprising psychological tool for pausing your brain's autopilot.
Which we all need.
Seriously. And the beauty of this tool is that it does not require you to hold a specific theology. It's designed to work whether you are deeply religious or entirely agnostic or, a strict atheist.
Okay, let's unpack this because
Yeah.
I want to start with the actual mechanics of this mechanized mind that Matheny describes. I mean, saying free will is an illusion is a massive, massive claim. How does the author actually back that up neuroscientifically?
Well, we have to stop looking at the brain as this blank slate that just sits back and thoughtfully weighs options in real time.
Okay.
Because neuroscience research, like particularly studies involving functional MRI and EEG machines, it shows a completely different sequence of events.
Wait, really? Like what?
So when subjects in these studies are told to simply, press a button whenever they feel the urge, their brain activity tells a completely shocking story.
Like it happens before they press it.
Even before that, the motor cortex, which is the part of the brain that initiates the movement, it often lights up seconds before the subject consciously registers the thought, "Oh, I am going to press the button now."
Wait, I need to make sure I am grasping the timeline you're laying out here.
Yeah, it's wild.
The brain physically starts executing a decision before the person's own inner monologue even knows a decision has been made.
That is the very uncomfortable reality of the data. The subconscious mind, it routes the decision based on millions of data points, initiates the action, and then a fraction of a second later, your conscious awareness catches up and says, "Ah, I just decided to do this." Yeah, but your conscious mind didn't actually do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Unseen forces did.
Unseen forces, like, I mean, just basic biology.
Biology, genetics, your nervous system's baseline, sure. But it also includes your nurture. Every piece of past trauma, every bit of social conditioning from your childhood, all your deeply ingrained subconscious biases.
So it's basically an infinitely complex algorithm.
Exactly. Everything you have ever experienced is stored in your neural pathways, and that whole system reacts to environmental inputs almost instantly.
Man, let me try a metaphor to see if I'm getting the dynamic here between the conscious and subconscious mind.
Go for it.
So, if my subconscious decides what I'm doing before my conscious mind even registers it, am I basically just like a toddler sitting in a car seat who has been handed a fake plastic steering wheel?
Oh, I like that.
Right, like I'm sitting in the back of a minivan spinning this plastic wheel, totally convinced I'm driving the car, when in reality, the parent up front is making all the turns.
What's fascinating here is how biologically accurate that analogy actually is, especially when you look at how the brain justifies its own actions.
How so?
Well, your conscious awareness is essentially the PR department for your brain.
The PR department.
Yeah, it issues a retroactive press release for a decision that was already finalized behind closed doors by the executives. And those executives are your neural pathways, your trauma responses, your chemical makeup.
Oh, wow.
It just spins the story so you feel like you are in control.
That is mildly terrifying. But it also, I mean, it explains so much about human behavior.
It really
Like,
does.
if I snap at a coworker because I only slept 4 hours and I haven't eaten, my PR department might tell me, oh, I snapped at them because their idea was terrible and I just have high
Right,
standards.
you rationalize it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the reality is just a tired machine reacting to low blood sugar and elevated cortisol.
Exactly. The machine is just running its software. And this actually moves us from the abstract realm of neuroscience directly into concrete, real-world data.
Right, because it's not just brain scans.
No, Matheny argues that if we want to see the proof of this constrained, mechanized mind, we don't just need to look at isolated lab experiments. We need to look at the macro data of society.
And the data he brings in is heavy. It really shifts the argument from like theoretical philosophy to an undeniable societal reality because he points straight to the DSM, you know, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Right, the defining text used by mental health professionals to classify psychiatric conditions.
And there are roughly 300 listed disorders in the DSM. That is 300 distinct ways the human mind can chemically or structurally deviate from baseline functioning. And here's where it gets really interesting. Matheny poses this really challenging question to you, the reader. He asks, did a person with any of these 300 listed disorders use their quote-unquote free will to create their DSM disorder?
And obviously, the answer is no. I mean, nobody wakes up and actively chooses to generate major depressive disorder or schizophrenia or severe anxiety.
Exactly.
These are chemical and structural realities of the brain that dictate a person's emotional and behavioral baseline.
Let's break down the sheer scale of the numbers he provides here because they are just staggering. He cites data from 2020 showing that approximately 50 million people in the United States were taking psychiatric medications.
50 million. And that covers an enormous spectrum of human experience, you know, antidepressants, ADHD stimulants, anti-anxiety meds, antipsychotics, mood stabilizers.
It's massive.
It is. That represents 50 million individual human beings whose native brain chemistry is actively preventing them from functioning the way they want to the point where they require external medical alteration.
And he doesn't even stop there. He pulls additional data from 2022, noting an estimated 29.5 million Americans aged 12 and older, by the way, are actively battling an alcohol use disorder.
So when you combine those two populations,
You get over 79 million people. That is roughly a quarter of the entire United States population.
one in four people.
Yeah, one in four is either relying on legally prescribed mind-altering drugs to stabilize their baseline, or they are self-medicating through alcohol abuse. And he points out that doesn't even account for the massive number of people using illegal drugs to cope.
Right.
So his question hits with incredible force. Do all of these 79 million people possess pure, unadulterated free will?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this data profoundly illustrates the mechanism of constrained choice. I mean, if free will were truly absolute, a person suffering from severe depression could just simply exercise their willpower and choose to be happy.
But they can't.
An addict could just choose to never crave alcohol again. But they can't. Their dopamine and serotonin receptors are physically altering their perception of reality.
Yeah.
Matheny's overarching point is that when one-fourth of a society literally cannot rely on their raw brain chemistry to navigate a normal day without chemical intervention, we have to admit that biology is driving the bus, not willpower.
I am fully tracking with the science here, and the statistics are undeniable, but I have a major problem with this premise. I need to play devil's advocate for a moment.
Okay, let's hear it.
If we accept the science and we accept the data that we are basically pre-programmed biological machines constrained by trauma and chemistry, I mean, doesn't this just give everyone a massive hall pass to act terribly?
Right, the accountability issue.
Exactly. If I'm just a machine playing on my programming, why shouldn't I just be a selfish jerk? What anchors my ethics if nothing is truly my fault?
You are hitting on the exact existential dread that comes with determinism. Like, if the toddler with the plastic steering wheel realizes they aren't actually driving, they might just start throwing their snacks around the minivan.
Exactly. Just pure chaos.
But Matheny introduces a concept to counter that exact nihilism. We might be deeply constrained, yes, but we are not entirely powerless.
Which brings us to the most critical pivot in the deep dive. To find our moral compass within this mechanized mind, Matheny suggests asking a simple, historically famous question: what would Jesus do? Or WWDD?
And it is vital to pause here and explain exactly how the author frames this. Because when you hear that phrase, it carries decades of cultural baggage, right?
Oh, yeah, like 1990s youth group bracelets and rigid dogma.
Exactly. But Mathodese strips all of that away entirely. He is deploying this not as a religious command, but as a specific, highly targeted psychological tool. He calls it engaging the observer self, or the higher self.
I love how he repositions it. Think of it like a software override code.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Imagine you're driving, right, and someone violently cuts you off in traffic. Your amygdala instantly floods your brain with adrenaline and cortisol. Your biological programming dictates that you lay on the horn, scream, and maybe ride their bumper.
Your machine is running its retaliation protocol.
Exactly. In that exact fraction of a second, the machine takes over.
This raises an important question, though. If your brain has already decided to be enraged, how does a forward question stop that chemical cascade?
From what I understand from the piece, it basically hijacks the chemical response by forcing a totally different part of the brain to turn on.
Yes. You are forcing the prefrontal cortex back online. Because when your subconscious serves up that reflexive behavior, your conscious mind usually just executes the command blindly.
Right.
But by introducing a specific, universally understood archetype of ultimate compassion, in this case, the historical and literary figure of Jesus, you force the system to halt. It creates a gap.
So you are physically interrupting the neural pathway.
Yes, exactly. You aren't commanding yourself from this ego-driven place of, you know, I need to be a better person right now, because the ego is way too weak to fight the adrenaline.
Oh, for sure. Adrenaline wins that fight every time.
But instead, you're holding up an archetype of radical empathy. It gives you a millisecond to observe your own anger rather than just being completely consumed by it. It allows you to recalibrate before you actually act.
It pulls you out of the reactive mind and into the observer mind. You stop being the software and you become the programmer for just a split second.
Beautifully said.
But this is where the rubber meets the road, right? It's one thing to use this pause to stop yourself from yelling in traffic, but Matheny argues this pattern interrupts scales up to massive social and internal issues.
He does.
He provides this roadmap of behavioral examples based on the narrative of Jesus's life to show what this moral calibration actually looks like in practice.
And he uses these narratives as archetypal examples of human behavior operating at its highest possible moral frequency.
Yeah, and I notice he focuses heavily on how we manage our internal emotional regulation, particularly our tendency to judge others. He talks about practicing active empathy, not just nodding along and intellectually understanding someone's pain, but truly stepping out of your own ego to sit in their suffering.
Which is a massive biological override. I mean, our evolutionary programming generally tells us to avoid other people's pain.
Because pain is dangerous.
Exactly. Empathy requires you to disrupt your own comfort to alleviate someone else's suffering. It goes against the basic survival drive.
He pairs that with the concept of challenging our own self-righteousness, too. He brings up the famous story, you know, let the one without sin cast the first stone.
Right.
Our autopilot constantly wants to judge other people because it makes our ego feel superior and secure. The WWJD override forces you to scan your own flaws before you execute that judgment.
It dismantles the tribalism our brains naturally default to.
Yeah.
When you look at his examples of crossing social lines like welcoming the marginalized, dining with outcasts, touching those deemed quote-unquote unclean by society, you see a deliberate disruption of in-group, out-group dynamics.
Which is so hard to do.
It is. Our mechanized mind wants to stick with people who look and think exactly like us because it feels safe. Reaching across those lines requires a very conscious override of evolutionary fear.
But the override isn't just about being passive or gentle and internally reflective. This is the part of the roadmap I found most surprising, honestly.
Oh, the temple tables.
Yes. Matheny points out that the higher self sometimes demands external disruption. He uses the example of confronting injustice by overturning the tables in the temple.
That is a crucial distinction. Sometimes the pattern interrupt requires you to actively disrupt systems of exploitation.
Right.
Your biological fear response might be telling you to just stay quiet, keep your head down,
yeah.
You know, don't cause a scene when you witness injustice. Overriding that fear to protect others takes immense courage.
And he balances that with how we handle personal provocation. When provoked, your mechanized mind immediately wants to fight or flee. But this archetype suggests responding with dignity, restraint, or even silence.
Imagine the software override required for that. Mm. Someone attacks you verbally, your heart rate spikes, your biology is screaming at you to humiliate them in return.
Mm.
Pausing to find dignity in that exact second is pure conscious recalibration.
And taking that to its absolute limit, he brings up choosing love over vengeance in the face of profound suffering. Father, forgive them.
Wow.
Vengeance is arguably one of the most deeply ingrained human responses to being wronged. It feels good. It feels like justice to the mechanized mind. Choosing radical forgiveness requires an almost superhuman activation of the observer self.
When you weave all these examples together, they really stop looking like ancient moral teachings, and they start looking like a highly sophisticated user manual for the human brain.
A user manual, yeah.
Prioritizing human compassion over rigid legalism, empathy over ego. They are literal interruptions to our reflexive behavior. They are a roadmap for conscious living in a world where we spend the vast majority of our time entirely unconscious.
So what does this all mean? I mean, I look at that roadmap, active empathy, endless forgiveness, confronting systemic injustice, and it feels like an impossibly high bar.
It sounds exhausting.
It does. If you're telling me I am a passenger in a self-driving car with a faulty steering wheel, how can I possibly be expected to execute perfect moral turns every single time? How do you implement this without feeling totally defeated by your own limitations?
The beauty of Matheny's conclusion is that it explicitly removed the burden of perfection. If our free will is inherently limited by our biology, our trauma, and our environment, then our moral responsibility isn't about achieving total dominance over every thought and action.
So it's not about pretending the machine doesn't exist.
No, not at all. It's about direction, not perfection. He calls it a moral compass. Think about how a compass actually works.
Okay.
It doesn't instantly teleport you to your destination. It doesn't remove the mountains or the bad weather in your path. It simply points you to true north. Using WWJD as a psychological interrupt is just aimed toward empathy, love, mercy, courage, truth, and forgiveness.
So you are definitely not going to hit the mark every time.
You won't. You just won't. Your mechanized mind is incredibly strong. You will still snap at people. You will still judge. But every single time you manage to use the interrupt, every time you pause, you are recalibrating your compass.
I see.
You're aiming your behavior toward those higher ideals, even if you stumble while walking the path.
You are shifting the trajectory, even just a fraction of a degree. Which really brings us to the core takeaway of this deep dive. The reality Matheny presents is so humbling. We may not be the completely free rational agents our egos desperately want us to believe we are.
No, we aren't.
We're bound by our biology, the trauma we've endured, our chemical makeup, and the deeply ingrained subconscious algorithms that just run the background of our lives. The data proves just how constrained our choices really are.
We are heavily constrained, but we are not entirely powerless.
Right. We are free enough to ask a question. We are free enough to deploy a pattern interrupt that gently shifts the direction of our very next moment. We cannot control the initial chemical impulse, the sudden spite of anger or fear, but we can fight for the pause before the reaction.
And fighting for that pause, that fleeting moment of tuning in to a higher moral current, that might be the only true liberating choice we actually possess. It reframes our entire understanding of human grace and responsibility.
It completely shifts the paradigm. Which leaves us with a final thought to ponder as we wrap up today's deep dive. We spent this time dissecting how the brain predicts our choices before we even know them, and how asking a profound question gives us a microsecond to override that deeply ingrained system.
Yeah.
So I want you to think about this as you go about your day. If our daily split-second decisions are mostly just the chemical illusions of a mechanized mind, but we do have the power to consciously pause our programming, does that mean true human free will doesn't actually exist in our actions, but only exists in the silent spaces between our reactions?
Man, that is a profound space to explore. The freedom isn't in what we do, but in the breath we take before we do it.
It changes everything. Thank you for joining us on this custom-tailored deep dive. We hope this exploration of the mechanized mind and the power of the pattern interrupt gives you a practical new tool for navigating your life, regardless of where you draw your inspiration from. Keep exploring, keep challenging your autopilot, and most importantly, keep asking those big questions. Until next time.